Hi, I'm Zoe, a second-year political science, economics, and international development student. I'm very happy to be back with you today for our first episode of Candid Conversations, the podcast of Catalyst, McGill's international development journal.
I'm Shanna, a first-year student in economics and international development, and I'm delighted to be co-hosting today with you, Zoe, for our podcast, Populations in Transition, Challenges and Opportunities, the first episode of the winter 2024 semester.
At a press conference on January 16, 2024, French President Emmanuel Macron unveiled measures to revive France's flagging birth rate. Using the term demographic rearmament, he sparked much debate in the French public arena. In fact, in 2023, only 678,000 babies were born in the country, a drop of around 7% compared to 2022. This is the lowest number of births since the end of the Second World War. Emmanuel Macron has expressed concern at the apparent rise in infertility and has proposed a major plan to stimulate the French birth rate. According to Elsa Conesa, a journalist specialized in economic policy at the newspaper Le Monde, the term demographic rearmament is not neutral and has given rise to much controversy. The birth rate has always been linked to war. More children, more soldiers. France's declining birth rate thus worries the French people. So we might ask, does a falling birth rate necessarily mean lower economic growth?
Well, on the one hand, this link seems obvious. Fewer births means fewer workers, and therefore lower economic growth in general. There's also the question of financing social protection. If the population decline, who's going to contribute to our pensions? But no worries about that. The correlation between births and economic growth has not yet been proven. Counterexamples such as Germany and Japan demonstrate that a declining population does not necessarily mean a decline in economic growth. Other external factors must be taken into account.
However, although today the birth rate is not necessarily a military issue, the idea that a high birth rate is a factor of power is still very much alive. For example, in April 2023, a UN report confirmed that a major demographic shift had taken place. India's population had overtaken that of China.
Exactly, on April 12th, 2023, with 1.43 billion inhabitants, India surpassed China's population. Let's face it, these two countries still make up one-third of the 8 billion human beings on the planet. Zoe, I don't know how you reacted, but personally, it did something to me. I remember 1 year ago when I was reading the articles everywhere at school, in the media, China had always held the role of the demographic queen, but now it's clearly been dethroned. It was a real reversal in the geopolitical trend, and I had a lot of questions about what was going to change, and most importantly, how did India get ahead of China?
One explanation may be that India has a much younger population and therefore a higher fertility rate. But above all, India has seen a decline in infant mortality over the last 3 decades. Dudley Poston Jr., an emeritus professor of sociology at the University of Texas, explained that China has now joined many European countries, such as France, I mentioned earlier, which records more death than birth each year. But are there any consequences other than demographic?
Well, it's not about just a matter of boasting about who is the most populous country in the world. There are real geopolitical consequences, but above all, it's disrupting the region's already fragile power dynamics. India's exploding population creates new economic opportunities, but it also intensifies competition with China for resources and investment. And it's upsetting alliances. Some countries are drawing closer to India to counterbalance China, while others are juggling the two. What British researcher Stuart Geadle Baston explained to the newspaper La Presse had a real impact on me. He showed that in the end, there are more at stake than just demographics. Psychologically, it will be difficult for China, especially given the rivalry in other areas between the two countries. He says that it's a great moment in human history that the baton is now being passed to India. Many would argue that a young population is an asset for developing country. So therefore one might ask whether in these developing countries having a young population is beneficial or not.
Indeed, in some developing countries, notably in the Middle East and North Africa region, we've seen a drop in mortality rates combined with high fertility rates between 1950 and 2010. A youth bulge has taken place. The growth of a young population can be both a blessing and a curse. At first glance, we think of the positive effects. A growing youth population means a larger workforce and can boost national productivity. In reality, the labor market in these developing countries is not ready to welcome these populations. Young people with a higher level of education than previous generations find themselves out of work because the market cannot absorb so many new arrivals. The result is high unemployment and the challenge of many unmet expectations for governments. So, how do governments react?
The question of government policies is crucial in managing demographic dynamics. Each government has different objectives. Some countries have introduced measures to encourage the birth rate, while others have adopted policies aimed at limiting birth. You're probably familiar with the one-child policy adopted in China in 1979.
Yeah, this policy was relaxed in 2015 to allow some couples to have two children, but it still left its mark on the current demographic imbalance, as you pointed out earlier. Other countries, such as Indonesia in the 1970s, also tried to limit birth through family planning policies and contraception awareness campaigns.
In terms of initiatives to stimulate births, France, for example, has introduced measures such as generous family allowances and childcare subsidies. These policies aim to reduce the financial and logistical burden associated with raising children in the hope of encouraging couples to have more children. These different approaches clearly reflect the specific concerns and priorities of each country in terms of demographic, economic, and social development.
So, when we talk about demographics, we're also talking about varieties of families and cultures. The complexity of today's demographic dynamics lies in the fact that some populations are growing while others are stagnating or declining. Each government seeks to respond to the unique challenges posed by its own demographic situation, from China's one-child policy to France's measures to encourage parenthood. Nevertheless, despite their efforts, governments have limited control over their respective demographic growth, and the individual always has a choice.
Demography is not only about data, it's about values, policies, and visions for the future. Ultimately, how we manage our demographic challenges today will shape the world of tomorrow. So as we look to the future, Catalyst continues to be the place where ideas meet, perspectives intersect, and solutions emerge. For it is together, as catalysts for change, that we can shape a more inclusive, equitable, and resilient world.
If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Catalyst. And if you want more content like this, visit our website to read articles on catalystmcgill.com. Thank you. Bye.